Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us today on the broadcast. This is, of course, Wednesday, so it's our special Worldview Wednesday edition of the program, and is our habit on Wednesday. We have a guest from World Magazine who will join us for the first part of the broadcast today, and that guest today is going to be J.C. Derrick is joining us again on the broadcast. He is with the Washington Bureau for World Magazine, and so he's going to be talking about a couple of those issues. In fact, we're going to zero in on two specific issues with him. One, we want to talk with him a little bit about the Iranian pastor who is still in prison despite the agreement that the Obama administration brokered along with the Iranian leaders. And, you know, a lot of folks thought that if something like that came about, that many people are not in favor of to begin with, that agreement. But if it did, certainly it would include the idea that that pastor would be released. Well, his wife has been out speaking about this issue and saying that she is extremely disappointed in the United States government and Congress and the Obama administration because he has not been released. In fact, it doesn't seem that that was part of the negotiation whatsoever. So we want to talk to J.C. about that issue and get him to bring us up to speed as to what's taking place there. And the second issue of importance that we want to speak with him about today is the budget battle that's taking place. You may have just heard Fox News air just a few moments ago, just before we came on the air ourselves. And on Fox News, they were talking about that it appears that this budget is going to pass. And what are the ramifications of that? You know, there's a lot of conservatives, Tea Party conservatives specifically, that have been warning about this budget. We're seeing some things, some disturbing things related to the military members and their pension pay and so forth. And so we want to talk to JC about that issue as well. On the second half of the broadcast today, we're then going to talk about some really, really good news that's taking place. This particular news is focused on the area of San Antonio, Texas. Oh, Austin, Texas. I'm sorry. I said San Antonio. It's Austin, Texas. And it's a big state. So, you know, there's a lot of room for error for me. But anyways, Austin, Texas. And we're going to be talking about the idea that the Gospel of John is being delivered there. Now, you say, well, the gospel is being delivered everywhere. Well, the Gospel of John is being delivered to every single home in the entire city. And so we're talking over 400,000 Gospels of John, copies of the Gospel of John that are going out. So we're talking over 800,000 residents in those homes are now going to be exposed to the Gospel of John. This is via sermon audio, and we're going to talk with Bill Nunkesser is here with us in the studio, so we'll talk with him afterwards about this campaign. It's just outstanding, and how you can get involved. And there's going to be, I think when you hear how you can get involved, immediately you think that we're going to be talking about giving towards it. Let me just tell you, that's not the case here. There's a way for you to get involved that is more important than that. And we'll talk about that on the second half of the broadcast today. Okay, JC is up first. So, JC, let's talk a little bit about the pastor that is still imprisoned in Iran and what's taking place there and what his wife has been saying about this this deal brokered by John Kerry and the Obama administration.
Sure. It's been an interesting year. I think think the timing of this has been especially interesting, given that, you know, for the first time in decades, the U.S. has actually been engaging with the Iranian government on these nuclear talks. And I think when these talks came out, they reportedly took place in secret for months. And then when these talks came out and became public, it seemed like such an obvious thing to anybody who knows anything about the situation with several people, actually, but including Saeed Abedini being imprisoned wrongly over there. Mm-hmm. It just seems like such an easy ask to involve that in the deal. Now, I spoke with Naghmeh Abedini last week, actually before the hearing, and she was telling me that they never wanted Saeed to be a part of the negotiations. They wanted the U.S. to stand on principle and say, we know we have something you want, which is to release the sanctions that are crippling their economy. Mm-hmm. And all the U.S. had to say was, you know, we'll sit down and negotiate with you over this if you release our prisoners, our citizens who have done nothing wrong. And she said, I wrote in my story, she said, I felt abandoned by our government that didn't even ask. And I also spoke with Congressman Chris Smith from New Jersey, who 2 days prior to the Abedini hearing, there was a hearing in the Foreign Affairs Committee on Iran and just the situation over there, and the nuclear agreement and Congress, both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, are very unhappy with the deal that the administration cut. But Congressman Chris Smith took his 5 minutes of time to question Kerry, and he really pressed him on this issue of Saeed Abedini. Mm. And he told me later, he said, I expected the Secretary of State to say, oh, well, we tried, we just couldn't make it happen. But he said he was shocked to find that they didn't even ask. Of course, John Kerry said, well, I brought his name up, but, as Jordan Sekulow, the counsel for the Abedini family, as he said, bringing someone's name up doesn't, on the fringes of discussions, isn't advocating for their release necessarily. It's not, it doesn't accomplish anything just to raise someone's name. Mm. And so they were all very, very frustrated with the administration for not leveraging or using the leverage they had to secure his release.
Mm-hmm. There was another element here that was directly connected with World Magazine a few months ago. I think we were speaking with Emily Bells at that point, and Emily Bells had been sitting in a hotel lobby with Mrs. Abedini, and in walks the Iranian president with his entourage. And she was able to go over and through one of his security people to hand him a handwritten letter calling for the release of her husband. And so that was quite a providential meeting of those two individuals. Has there been any feedback whatsoever on that letter that was hand delivered?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't had I haven't asked Naghmeh directly about that, but I'm pretty sure that nothing specific has become of that. Mm. I think Chris Smith said it best when he pointed out at the hearing last week. He said, you know, as soon as we make this a priority, then they will, and you know, Pastor Abedini could be on a plane home tonight. Mm-hmm. But as long as we aren't really prioritizing this, then it's not going to happen. And John Kerry he admitted as much at the Iran hearing Tuesday of last week. He said, he basically spelled out, in not so many words, but he spelled out the fact that the nuclear negotiations are with Iran, that is this administration's number one foreign policy objective right now. And he said they didn't want anything to get in the way of that. And in one sense, you know, that's sort of understandable. It is an important issue, certainly. No one would deny that. But mm-hmm. When it is such an important issue, and you know you hold so much leverage over the Iranians, that's why I think it baffled so many people that more of an effort wasn't made on this pastor's behalf.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned the idea of sanctions being part of this deal, the lifting of those sanctions, We're talking to the tune of billions of dollars in sanctions, correct?
That's correct. I can't tell you all the specifics. I'm not an expert on Iran's economy, but I do know that John Kerry said that the sanctions we have in place right now will and continue to be in place. The majority of the sanctions remain in place. So what this nuclear deal does is it basically loosens one piece of it. You know, it's like $6 to $7 billion that will be loosened, that basically the Iranian government will be able to access. And they'll have that money, but you know it is a $1 trillion economy, so it's not like it's making a drastic difference, but it is still a lot of money. You know? And so, I think again, the bottom line is that we have the leverage, we have something that they want, and we didn't you know, and it's like the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or the co-chair, I think Katrina Lento-Sweat. She appeared at the hearing on Thursday that primarily discussed the Abedini case. And she said, you know, it's hard to imagine a scenario where a country who won't even do something so simple. And she said, it's so easy just to hand over a political prisoner who's done nothing wrong. She said, if they're not even willing to do that, it's hard to imagine how we can trust them to do something so big as deconstruct a sophisticated nuclear program.
Exactly. Yeah, that it is a huge issue, of course, and a lot of people are not happy with the Obama administration, to say the least, for the way that they're going about it. Seem to really have considered our ally Israel very much in this whole equation. It's easy for us to say that we trust the Iranians in this way. But Israel is first and foremost in the crosshairs. And when we're talking nuclear bombs, you don't get any mulligans. You know, you get one time and then you go, oh, you know what? We should have taken them a lot more serious. Well, at that point, they've already held true to their threat to wipe Israel off the map. And these bombs have the ability to go a long way to doing exactly that. And so it's easy, I think, for those folks that sit over here, politicians, and talk about, you know, how we can, well, let's give this a try a little bit longer and these types of things, this whole time while they're continuing to fortify the bunkers where these things are, to continuing to build more and more centrifuges, continuing to enrich more and more uranium. This thing is going forward, and it just seems like to so many American people that these are just stalling tactics, you know, that just buying themselves more and more time. And that's what you need when you're making a nuclear bomb. You need time for these things to take place. And they seem to be, at least to the people on the outside in the circles that I run in, they seem to be feeling that they're just biding their time and continuing with their progress. You know, one case in point that made me think that it should be easy to do this was, remember with the Libya and the negotiations that took place there, and it seemed that part of those negotiations, although it was never said overtly, was the release of the Lockerbie bomber. So here's this guy who takes down an aircraft, and I lived in a little town in Buffalo, New York, where a girl from outside of Buffalo actually died in that plane crash. I knew her brothers and everything well. They were business owners there in the town that I lived in. And yet he was released, and a lot of people feel that that was tied somehow to the negotiation. So a bomber can get released from England, you know, as part of the negotiation, but a pastor cannot get released out of the Iranian prison as part of this negotiation. It just doesn't sit well.
Right, absolutely. And I think that's what everybody sees. And John Kerry says, oh, the release didn't have anything to do with these negotiations and everything. But I think it still underscores the fact that it's not hard to release another country's prisoner, you know, and especially in a case like this, where just his imprisonment is just so egregious. Mm. And during these nuclear talks, they move him to a worse prison. And it's almost like the Iranians want to say, it's almost like they want to turn him into a bargaining chip, like they want to use him to get something, but the Americans don't ask. Mm-hmm. And now I will say this: there, someone asked me, is it possible that maybe the administration knows something we don't? There is that small possibility that we do have to remember. But I said, you know, what I told this person who asked me, I said, you know, I think you just look at the pattern with this administration, and whether it's, you know, the Libyan revolution or the Benghazi scandal or the bumbling in Syria or Egypt or wherever, as more facts come out in all of these foreign policy situations, typically we just see that it's even worse than we realized. And so I think that's why everyone's so quick to rush to judgment on this case. And I will say that also, John Kerry did offer during last week's Iran hearing, he did offer to Chris Smith that he would give a classified briefing to members of Congress on what they're doing to secure Pastor Abedini's release. And I know Jordan Sekulow certainly encouraged at the Thursday hearing, he encouraged them to take him up on that, to find out any information possible, because you know, certainly from where most of us are sitting, it doesn't appear that the administration is doing all they can as they've claimed they have. And Nagma even told me, she said they have not been transparent about this.
Yeah, there's only one of two possibilities here. Either you're not making it a priority, or you're not very good at negotiations, because this shouldn't be that difficult when we're talking that they want billions of dollars released to them. And they want this deal. I mean, they were the ones who were bringing up this idea of a deal. So it shouldn't be that difficult from that vantage point to be able to negotiate the release of one man. And so it either is now speaking towards the incompetence of our foreign policy to be able to do this, or it's speaking to the idea of they just don't care about the pastor at all. So we've got to come down on one of those two, but I don't think it is the idea that it's just so difficult to do this. If they want the deal, this is part of the deal, take it or leave it. And I think the Iranians would take it, because it was a very good deal for them. There was no doubt about it.
Well, and it's interesting you use that word incompetence, because that came up at the hearing. Jordan Sekulow said, you know, the something about the incompetence of the State Department. And there were more Republicans than Democrats at the hearing, but there were I think at least three Democrats that came in at different times. And the ranking member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, I believe, was in there at the time, Congressman Deutsch. And he pushed back. I mean, he kind of scolded Sekulow for calling the administration incompetent. He said it doesn't help to, you know, blast the Obama administration. You know, that's not helpful at this point. and Sekulow was just incredulous, like, you know, it is what it is. And he talked, Congressman Smith, Chris Smith, went off on, you know, he said, you know, I don't care who's in the, and Congressman Smith, he's been in Congress for like 32 years. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't care who's in the White House. The religious freedom always takes a back seat. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, it doesn't matter who the administration is, they always need to be held accountable on these types of issues. And it's true. If the people aren't speaking up and demanding that their representatives, in this case the administration, do something in a case like this, then a lot of times they'll just take the road of least resistance. And if someone disappears off the map, then, you know, what does the administration care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thou shalt not criticize this administration seems to be the commandment that they're ruling by. It's open for scrutiny. It's open for critique, and you know, the evidence is not good against them, and their track record is very poor, and so forth. I know we use the analogy of Neville Chamberlain. Unfortunately, I don't know if people know their history well enough to understand the significance of that. But coming back and waving that document and saying, you know, we have achieved peace in our time, it looks awful similar. And, of course, that didn't work out very well with the Nazis, and I don't think this is going to work out very well with the Iranians. And now we're not talking about the type of war machine that the Nazi had, but we're talking about nuclear weapons. And so, again, you just don't get a mulligan here. You don't get a do-over. And so we have to take it very, very seriously. they seem to be taking it seriously, and I'm just not so sure that we do as well as at least the administration. I think the American people understand the significance of it, but I don't think the administration fully does for whatever reason. I don't know why that reason is, but for whatever reason. Speaking about not taking things seriously, let's talk about the budget for a second and what's going on there. We only have a few minutes left, but we got to get you to give us a synopsis. We're in the middle of setting up a few things technologically wise here in the studio beforehand. I didn't get to hear all of the Fox News, but do we have a, is that budget been passed at this point, or what's the status?
You know, since we've been talking, I haven't watched closely, but I think it's probably going to be this afternoon when, when it officially passes. But it does appear that there will be, you know, bipartisan support, certainly all the Democrats and several Republicans who will vote for it. So, you know, probably we'll get over the 60-vote threshold. Yesterday, there was the cloture vote, which is basically just the motion to proceed to avoid a filibuster, and they needed 60 votes to proceed with the bill, and they got 67. So, in looking at some of those, you know, there were 12 Republicans who voted with Democrats, and I think it was 12, something like that, who voted with Democrats on this, and it looked like most of them are the typical, you know, moderate type people, the John McCains of the world and so on. However, there was one notable exception, which was Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who incidentally is the same state as Paul Ryan is from. And he is a conservative and pretty staunch conservative. And he said that he was not only voting for cloture, he wanted to move forward with the bill, but he also plans to vote. Some of those who voted for cloture won't vote for the final bill, but he's one who said he would vote for the final bill. And he said, you know, I haven't talked to him personally, but I read he put out a statement that talked about just he said, you know, there's a lot of things in this bill I do not like, but he said, I feel like it does more, you know, more good than bad. And that's been the refrain all week since last week. That I've heard so many times from both sides of the aisle. Neither side likes the bill.
Yeah, you know? All decade. It's always been the refrain, you know, this is the best we can do, the best we can get. We're going to have to go ahead and just go ahead with this, even though it doesn't do what we want it to do. I mean, they might as well just cue the tape, you know, and then when they do these things, just go ahead and play that tape It's the same every time. I guess, you know, the big political loser, in my estimation, in this whole thing, if we care about the politics of it, is the idea of Paul Ryan. You know, I think that he came out to be any idea that he was this great conservative champion, you know, that he was he understood all how this all worked, you know, the sausage was made and all that, and that he was our guy in there going ahead for the. I think that he really suffered the most. I think now a lot of people almost summarily just wrote him off and just said, you know, up there we go, we got another one that's you know, just like the rest of the moderates, and he's not going to be there for us. And that was my take on what the way I heard people interpreting what was going on. What do you think?
You know, that certainly seems like it would be the case. And, you know, I figured there would be a lot of people upset with him. But I'll be honest, there haven't been as many as I would have expected. And last week, right after they announced the bill, before the House vote took place, but after they'd made the announcement of the bill, you know, what this deal was going to include, I was at a press conference where there were probably 10 members of the House, which I would say probably 8 out of 10 of them were voting against the deal. They were not happy with it at all. These are staunch conservatives. And even the ones who were voting against it said that they didn't blame Paul Ryan. And that's interesting because – well, it's like, who else do you blame? You know, I spoke with someone on the Tom Cole, who is a member of the House who is on the committee, and he said this is very much a two-person deal. It's not like the 29 members of the House and Senate who were on the committee really had anything to do with it. You know, it was two people, not 29. I mean, it was just Patty Murray, the Democratic senator from Washington, and Paul Ryan. And so If anyone is going to assign blame, like you said, it seems like they would blame Ryan. To this point, that's not really what I've heard, just in talking with people and even staffers in the halls of Congress. They feel like, even the ones who vote against it, they feel like this is just, it's a miracle anything happened at all, you know, because as we've seen with the, you know, our expectations are so low now. It's sad.
Hey, we've got Obama's, got all these problems with the healthcare.gov and the entire Obamacare thing. They're very vulnerable. Right now, it'd be easy to say, hey, these are the same people that have just spent $1 billion on a website. You know, do we really think that they can handle the budget? I mean, you've got tremendous amount of leverage and political clout now because of the wounds that they've inflicted upon themselves and liberalism as a whole. And yet the Republicans seem completely inept to take advantage of these moments and now to strike while the iron is hot. We have a couple. Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, a couple other people there that are willing to stand up and make a statement and so forth. But the rest of them, the other big loser that I would say is got to be John Boehner, because John Boehner going off on these rants against the right wing of the party and specifically the Tea Party. I mean, I'm thinking, what are you thinking? You know, you've got to be kidding me. You know, if you're going to vote for it, vote for it. But then to go out there and go on these long rants about the right wing of the party, it was just, when we've got momentum going into 2014 and the elections and so forth, to me, you know, boy, they just are masters at mishandling some of these situations. And I think that this was one of them. Again, I think Senator Cruz has come out on top on these things and standing up. He seems to be the voice there now of standing up and saying, him and Rand Paul, I would say, standing up and saying enough is enough. We've got to do something else here. The budget is we've got to get this across to the evangelicals as well, too. The budget is a moral issue. And somehow we have to let people know that these are just not numbers that we're talking about, disconnected from real life. This is there are actual lives behind these numbers, like our military in this particular
case. And consequences.
Consequences, exactly. And people are, they're busy shopping and trying to run their own lives, and they're very busy right now. So I don't think it got the billing that it should. But that was a sad day, I think, for the. For the United States Senate and passing this and continuing the slide of towards real budget issues here and deficit issues for the country. Go ahead, JC. I'll give you the last word.
Real quick, I was just going to say I think the real danger is in just saying, well, we made progress, and then nothing else happens for the next 2 years. That's the real problem. Passing up another opportunity to make real changes to structural problems like the entitlement programs that simply can't be sustained. And so I think that's the biggest danger, is not necessarily this bill, but just that it represents
the
two
attitude.
More years of being swept under the rug.
Yeah, the attitude again. You know, they're not serious about this. You know, if it was my house, and I was thinking about my budget and I was in the same position that they're in, you make some big cuts and you say, hey, we can't afford this anymore, we're not spending on this and so forth, and they don't have that attitude at all. They just business as normal, as usual, and just going forward. And it we're really going to, somebody said a long time ago that this is the greatest security national security issue is our financial situation right now in this country, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so we really got to get a handle on this one way or the other. JC, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed here today and these important issues and the great work you guys are doing there at World Magazine. We really appreciate what you're doing. So thanks again, and have a Merry Christmas, my friend.
Great. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too.
I was looking on the Skype here to see if I could see a present under there with a K at the beginning of it. I couldn't see it, but that's okay.
It's not under the tree just yet.
Oh, okay. It takes a little bit. Okay. All right. Well, good seeing you, my friend. We'll talk
to
you later.
Thanks.
All righty. I mentioned there that I was able to see under the tree. We were Skyping live with him, and I should have mentioned that right on the very beginning, but you can also watch the program on a regular basis now out on sermonaudio.com. That's www.sermonaudio.com/knowingthetruth. So you can not only listen to the broadcast, but watch the broadcast as well. And we were just doing a live video Skype with JC in Washington, D.C., and so we appreciate him doing that. We're doing that more and more. And speaking about sermon audio, we're going to be talking with Bill Neunkesser in just a few moments about a really important project that's taking place in Texas. And we're going to talk about the Gospel of John is being delivered to every single home in a city in Texas. And so we're going to talk about that as soon as we come back from the break. And you're going to want to hear about these great details of what's taking place. I love the Gospel of John, of course. I know you do as well. We'll talk a little bit about that as soon as we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.